massive show for you here today as JJ Zacharyson joins to talk about the five best and the five worst ADPs on Yahoo Fantasy Football right now. Which dead zone running back do you just absolutely have to avoid? A rookie wide receiver who's just simply going way too late. What an outrageous situation going on Yahoo ADP. And why the quarterback that everybody loves this year actually might have some holes in his fantasy football resume. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, August 6th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is one of my good pals, in my opinion, one of the best, if not the best, fantasy football analyst in the game. It's JJ Zacharyson of the Late Round Podcast, Late Round Draft Guide. JJ, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. We're only days away from reuniting with one another at the Fantasy Football Expo. We'll see each other this weekend. We now get to see each other yearly, which is a nice little delight to my life.
It truly is. I'm definitely planning on fighting you in real life, so that's going to be great. Either like one big giant bro bear hug type situation or a full on boxing match. We'll see where it goes.
We'll see one of those two directions. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. But hey, yeah, the expo is going to be great this week. We're going to be doing a podcast, not me and JJ, but me and Scott Pienowski are going to be doing a podcast from the Fantasy Football Expo. So that should be an absolute delight. But before we get there, we got a whole week ahead of us here. It's rankings week on the podcast. So we have a great show for you here today. But before we dive into the content, of course, I have to give you an extremely important programming note for your life, because you need to sign up for Yahoo Fantasy Football League right now if you haven't already. I mean, come on, you're listening to this podcast on August 6th, okay? So you're really into fantasy football. So if you haven't signed up for a league on Yahoo, I mean, what are you doing? But if that's not reason enough, me shaming you, I got a better reason for you, because Yahoo Sports and NBC are teaming up for a $1 million sweepstakes. Here's how you enter. You sign up for a private Yahoo Fantasy Football League and draft your team. If any of the players you start scores a touchdown in the week one games on NBC and Peacock, you're going to earn a bonus entries into that sweepstakes. Each person can earn up to 8 entries, one for just signing up, and up to 7 more for touchdowns scored in those 3 games. Deadline for entries is September 5th. So visit yahoo.com/fantasymillion to join. Speaking of drafting, a lot of you are going to be doing that this month. And that is why each week here in August, we're going to have a central theme to all the pods. As mentioned, this week is rankings week. And today we are focusing on the best and worst ADPs in the very early portion of drafting here on Yahoo. And JJ, I gave you all the work to do this. I am not going to contribute anything except just agreeing or disagreeing with you. I don't have any best, worst ADPs. You did all the work here, buddy. So you gave me 5 of the worst, 5 of the best ADPs on Yahoo so far. And let's just jump right into it here. Let's start with one of the best. We're going to alternate between best and worst. And I'll be honest with the listener, I'm saving the spiciest ones till the end of the show, the most interesting ones. But we'll start off kind of chalky here with one that I really agree with you with, which is Jalen Waddle, one of your best ADPs. Wide receiver 20, 34th overall player off the board. Why do you like Jalen Waddle this year, JJ?
Look, I don't think that he was any worse really last year than what we've seen from Jalen Waddle throughout his career. I mean, it's 3 years now that he's been in the league. He's ranked 15th, 11th, and 21st in point per game scoring at wide receiver. I mean, his target share per game rate hasn't dipped below 20%. It was 23% last year. His fantasy production was lower last season, but that's just because he couldn't stay healthy. If you look at his peripherals, his yards per route run percentile was in the 94th percentile. His targets per route run, 92nd percentile. There's a lot of people who are hesitant to draft team wide receiver twos in their draft, you know, that early. But, I've done research on this and I've looked at the last 10 years of ADP data. And wide receiver twos by ADP, who are their team wide receiver twos, they've actually outperformed the alternative. I think there's a lot of recency bias going on with like Devontae Smith, who I think is also a good value. Jalen Waddle being the obvious example as well. But those guys actually do better than the alternative. I don't think it's one of those things where like you seek them out, but it's one of those things where you shouldn't let that knock that player, right? And then the other thing too with Waddle, if Tyreek Hill were to go down with injury or for whatever reason take a step back, not that we're projecting that, I don't think that's really going to happen, but
sure.
You know, he is past 30 years old now, so we have to at least like be aware and cognizant that something could happen from an efficiency standpoint. But if Tyreek Hill were to go down with injury, Jalen Waddle would be a locked in top 8 to 10 wide out probably in fantasy football. He'd probably be getting a 30% target share week in and week out. We know Miami's offense projects to be pretty strong. Mike McDaniel's an offensive genius, or at least maybe genius is too strong a word, but a very, very good offensive mind. And so, yeah, I mean, I just feel really, really good about Waddle this year. And I think that there's a discount because of his injuries last year.
No, I think the point about the team wide receiver twos being discounted this year and like some of the recency bias at play is a really strong one, because I know that that's something that I came away last season like really trying to reckon with, because in all honesty, it is just it's just difficult in my mind to click a guy that I know is going to be a secondary target over a guy that's going to be a primary target, yeah. Right? Like weighing Jalen Waddle against Chris Olave is like really a tough one for me. But I ended up going Waddle ahead of Olave just because I have more faith in the offensive infrastructure in Miami. And I also have more faith in Waddle, the player. Like you mentioned it last year, he's a guy that, you know, he didn't have the fantasy success or the statistical success. Some of that was just like baked in regression that was going to happen anyways certain efficiency stats from the year prior, but still as a player, he had his career best success rate versus man zone and press coverage in reception perception last year. I actually came away from his film last year much more impressed than the year prior, particularly how he developed against physical outside coverage. And you know, the final thing here that I think does matter is that contingent value of Tyreek Hill. Like we focused a lot on Jalen Waddle kind of coming on and off the field with injuries last year, JJ, but you know, they, with all that pre-snap motion they do, obviously it's super critical to being as good of an offense as they are in Miami, but also really gasses Tyreek Hill. And there were times towards the end of the season where he was on and off the field with injury. So again, you can't project that stuff. You know, a lot of times like project, you know, we talk about this all the time, JJ, the difference between projections and rankings. Like you're not going to project some of these players for the high end of their range of outcomes, but that really does exist certainly for a player like Jalen Waddle if anything happened to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, 100%. And look, I love Chris Olave. You know that. Like I'm a truther. I think he's a very, very still an underrated player, at least like within the fantasy space and such. But,
agreed.
You know, the difference between like an Olave and a Waddle is Waddle does have that contingent upside. You know, Chris Olave is being drafted where, you know, we generally expect him to see a lot of work in that offense. I think Olave has the upside of like, you know, new offensive coordinator, maybe that offense, and hopefully that offense, you know, does have a lot more motion, is a lot more intriguing. But regardless, like I don't think that we can ignore the contingent upside piece with some of these wide receiver twos.
100%. Yeah. Again, just on that like rankings and projections point, because I kind of came into this year thinking like, am I going to be more down on these team wide receiver twos like Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith? For clarity's sake, again, Jalen Waddle's wide receiver 20 in early Yahoo ADP. I have met wide receiver 15. So, you know, 15 spots ahead of this. I'm definitely ahead of consensus, or at least I'm trying to be on Jalen Waddle here because of that. Look, yeah, from a projection standpoint, he's the secondary target, similar to like the Texans wide receiver room or the Packers wide receiver room. You're not going to project all those guys to necessarily finish where they're being drafted, but you have to lean into contingent upside, and especially because the floor is not really scary for certainly some of those Texans receivers, or really for Jalen Waddle. So that's something I've definitely come into this year kind of challenging myself on. Another thing I'm always trying to challenge myself on is to not fall for the tricky dead zone running back, JJ. That brings us to your first worst ADP here, which is Zamir White at running back 23, 66th overall. I have a feeling I know why you don't like Zamir White, but this is one I my rankings definitely disagree with. I have him a little bit higher than running back 23, but I'm very open to being wrong about this. So why am I wrong about this?
So, yeah, number one, the running back dead zone is real. I know that people will say, oh, not this year because running backs are going later. Well, you can look at the position itself and not even worry about opportunity cost and realize that, you know, mid-range RB2s into that RB3 range, like that type of player, just straight up without even looking deeper at like their pass-catching profiles and the kind of running backs that they are, that type of player has traditionally not worked out at nearly the rate as guys who go right before them. And then the guys who go right after them aren't that much worse historically from a hit rate perspective, right? That's where the running back dead zone comes from. And then, you know, on top of that, there is the opportunity cost side where when you take those guys, there are really good wide receivers, now quarterbacks and tight ends as well, that you're foregoing when you take those guys. So I do think that, you know, Zamir White, smack dab in the middle of the running back dead zone. And I think he's kind of a traditional dead zone back. You know, last season is really the tail end of the season is why people are ranking him relatively high this year. I think, like, if we didn't have him perform well on the ground towards the end of last year, I don't think that we would be as bullish on him right now. Like, I wouldn't necessarily see a massive difference in ADP between him and like Devin Singletary, right? It's like a similar, you know, poorer offense, a guy who could see a lot of work in that offense. You know, maybe people would be a little bit more bullish about the ground game workload because the dude is absolutely a truck. I mean, he is massive, and Devin Singletary is not that.
Capital J jacked, bro. I mean, Zamir White.
Like, I'm honestly worried to say something bad about Zamir White because he is intimidating AF. I mean, he is a large man. But here's the thing. If you look at what he did last year, he was past 100 rushing yards in two of his final four games with Josh Jacobs out. He hit 12.6 PPR points per game, or points in each of those games, right? That's not PPR points per game, it's higher than that. Now Jacobs is gone, and everyone's like, oh, this is going to be Zamir White's backfield. Well, I still have an issue because there is a lack of pass catching to his profile. He averaged a target share per game below 10% during that stretch last year. That's a number that we almost always want, you know, our running backs to hit in order to see a ceiling. You know, an RB2 can have a sub 10% target share, but RB1s almost always have that kind of target. And I want a ceiling for my running backs, right? And then you go back to college. This is what I always love to do too, is like, look at what they did, not just in the NFL when they're a younger player. And I almost feel the same way about like a Kenneth Walker, who is a brilliant running back on the ground, but we still haven't really seen it come together through the air. And it goes back to college. Kenneth Walker didn't do much as a receiver throughout college, and people made excuses and they said, oh, but he's a really, really good runner, and they didn't want to give him too much work through the air. I get all that, but we haven't seen it yet. Like, it's still, there's been multiple coaching staffs. You know, a guy like Walker was on multiple teams in college where he wasn't seeing that work. Zamir White, yeah, you can make the excuse that, you know, he's playing in a backfield with James Cook at Georgia, you know, in college, and Cook being the better pass catcher of the two, but he only had 17 receptions in 3 years at Georgia, which is not very strong at all. So, you know, I think that when you combine the market trends, you combine the fact that this offense, which I didn't bring up, but the offense itself doesn't project to be very good. And I also think, you know, Vegas is a team that I think will play decent defense. You know, their defense isn't that bad, but they're going to run the ball and run at a pretty slow pace, which is what I'm nervous about, right? There's not going to be a ton of plays run. And then you look at the alternatives there. You know, people will say, oh, Alexander Mattison sucks. I don't really disagree. I don't think that he's like a huge, huge threat. But if you look at how, like, there was a tweet that they had sent out. I can't credit whoever had sent this out. One of the beats, I think it was from The Athletic. But there was a tweet that was sent out showing a play-by-play of their practice with the ones, right? So it was a little scrimmage thing that they were doing. And on the drive that they had tweeted and posted, you got Alexander Mattison and Dylan Lauby getting work with the first team. And my fear is not so much that those guys are going to have crazy standalone value, but they're going to do enough to not make Zamir White a strong enough asset in fantasy football, right? I think White could match ADP, be in that low end RB2 range. That's fine. I don't really see the vision for his ceiling.
Yeah, so much good stuff to unpack there. Primarily starting with my biggest concern with any Raiders player this year is just that this offense is going to play so slow. They're going to potentially compete to run the fewest plays in the league. Like, anytime I'm thinking about clicking a Raiders player, that's the first thing I'm concerned with. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned the names Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew yet. Like, that's part of the concern of why I think they could run a very, very low amount of plays. And the Raiders are just such a tough team for me, man, because there are good players on this offense. Like, Davante Adams is still maybe not at the peak of his powers, but only like just maybe a tick down. Yeah. Jacoby Myers remains one of the most underrated receivers in the league. Like, their tight end duo, Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers, could be really interesting, and their offensive line is not bad. Like, I don't think it's one of the five worst units in the league or something like that. It's actually got some sneaky upside potential, in my opinion. But it just, again, it comes down to like Luke Getsy's the offensive coordinator. What is the philosophy of this team? The quarterback battle. Even if I think O'Connell, I think you start Aiden O'Connell as long as he like keeps that job. Like, we know what Gardner Minshew is. Yeah. Let's see what this other guy can do. It's still got to be the least. It's got to have the least juice of any quarterback competition that I can remember. It's not great. Like, we don't even have a. I'm not even saying that, again, I'm not a Sam Darnold guy, but at least like Sam Darnold's a former top five pick, you know, right. JJ McCarthy's like an intriguing rookie. We've got like a career backup level performer in Gardner Minshew and a, you know, fourth round pick from last year ago in Aiden O'Connell. So it just makes everything a little tough with the Raiders. And I will say too, to your point about just the conditions which he thrived in, which, you know, he did finish the season quite strong. Like, the Raiders were running so pure in that four-game stretch from a defensive perspective, like defensive scoring perspective. They blew out the Chargers in Zamir White's first start on that Thursday night game that got Brandon Staley fired. So I'm with you, and just there are some holes in Zamir White's resume. I do think I'm kind of okay with his ADP more than out on his ADP, just because I think he could – like, I think he could meet this ADP, but I don't think he's necessarily exceeding it. So, I don't know. Anything you want to touch on there? Because I do have one just follow-up point about this.
Yeah, I would just say he feels like a player who, if you rank him, you know, as an analyst or even as a player, if you rank him in that low-end RB2 range, I don't think that it's necessarily automatically going to be a situation where, like, he's not giving you any production, right?
Sure.
This is just more, I think that part of the Zamir White thing and a lot of the dead zone running back thing is also philosophical in how you want to attack your team and play the game, right? And for me, when I'm drafting RB2s, I want them to have RB1 upside, and I just don't really see that with Zamir White.
Yeah, because even like anytime you make an argument for running back in the dead zone, starting with, well, there's no one else there, you've immediately put like one foot into very, very dangerous territory, because there can always be somebody else.
It's Mike Davis all over again, right? That's the easiest argument to go to with an example is Mike Davis, where everyone, when he went to Atlanta after that Carolina season, everyone's like, oh, Mike, like, who else is going to touch the ball? And then in comes Cordarrelle Patterson. Like,
anybody,
There's always someone when you're not a special enough talent, which to me, there's only, you know, eight running backs that are like special talents that are going to see a crazy workload no matter what, that don't have that fragility. And when you don't have that, and when you're really making the argument based solely on lack of competition, that can get you in trouble. That to me is where I think the running back talent argument really matters the most.
So I think that primarily you're Zamir White kind of fade here at ADP is primarily like a structural thing, you know, just market trends and stuff like that. But are there any running backs kind of going after him that you would rank ahead of Zamir White? I'll just throw out some names here from Yahoo ADP. Najee Harris, DeAndre Swift, Jaylen Warren, Brian Robinson, Tajay Spears, Zach Moss, Devin Singletary are running backs 24 to 30. Maybe there are some deeper names that you'd throw out, but those are kind of guys going right after him.
Yeah, so I think that you can easily make the argument for the Pittsburgh guys, for either one, depending on your format too. I think, you know, in PPR formats, then Jaylen Warren is a lot easier to sort of gravitate towards, because I don't think Zamir White's going to have a 10% target share in that offense. But even Najee Harris, who I think is just going to be like, I mean, I just don't really see a big difference between Harris and White when Harris has the contingent upside of Jaylen Warren going down and then all of a sudden being a bell cow in an Arthur Smith offense is really intriguing. But to me, you know, it's less about, do I love, you know, I am lower in terms of my running back rankings with Zamir White, but like there are guys like Tajay Spears at his ADP versus Zamir White at his all day long. Chase Brown at his ADP versus Zamir White at his all day long. And so in that range, I'm most likely opting just for other positions as well, not just the running backs.
Yeah, it's a great thing to talk about here on Rankings Week, how rankings can be faulty when we're talking about, you know, these guys in these numerical lists. Like, okay, we don't hate where he's going, but maybe just pass it up for the next tier and target a different positional player. Okay, let's move on to another best ADP here. Mark Andrews, tight end 4, 55th overall. I love this one, JJ. I think Mark Andrews has been one of my favorite picks at the position all year so far.
Yeah, it's really weird. I feel like people think that he was like bad last year or something. Like I that's my only explanation. Maybe it's the injury, like the, you know, he's had that issue that folks might be scared of, but I don't think that that's been talked about enough for that to be the reason as to why Andrews is slipping the way that he is. But his 23% target share per game rate last year was a little bit lower than his norm, but he was also injured throughout the season. If you look at his peripherals, he had nearly an identical yards per route run year over year from 2022 to 2023. It was 1.96 versus 1.95. And he was used more heavily in the red zone last year with Todd Monken in that offense than what we had seen the previous season. He averaged 13.5 PPR points per game last year. In 2022, it was 12.7. So he saw an increase year over year from 2022 to 2023 in points per game, but his ADP has dropped. And I don't really understand the bottom line reason for that. I think that, you know, in general, this is, again, more of like a game theory thing. But, you know, if you look at the tight end landscape last year, a lot of the high end tight ends were underperformed. You know, it's crazy that Travis Kelce in PPR formats was technically the tight end one on a points per game basis. And people still say, oh, he underperformed because of where he was drafted and what we expected. Right. But he was still the tight end one. But then also last year, we had all of these late round tight ends. We had that awesome rookie class. We had Trey McBride off the wire. We had Jake Ferguson. We had some really, really good late round tight end hits. It was this perfect combination of badness at the tight end position, right? And then this year, we're seeing ADP kind of reflect that. Tight ends are going a little bit later than they typically go. And, you know, I think people might be thinking that they can lean on later round tight ends because of what happened last year. But this is the year, I think. I'm not usually an early round tight end guy necessarily, like not automatically, I should say. I think this is the year that you lean into that because they are at a depressed price compared to most seasons. So with Andrews, you know, this offense, I know was still a run heavy offense when you look at like overall pass rate, but a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were just leading all the time. And it was a very, very good team. If you look at how they performed above or below expected dropbacks over expected, it wasn't really that bad. You know, I think that if they regress back to a mean of them, you know, they're not going to be like as effective as a team, as a unit in general. Maybe they don't win as many games just because it's that hard to repeat the performance that Baltimore had last year. Then automatically you'll see a little bit more passing. They didn't do that much over the offseason to add to the pass catching room. They lose OBJ. They add Tez Walker, who's more of a deep threat type to begin with. You know, there's a lot of talk about Isaiah Likely, which I think is valid because I think he's a good player as well. But, you know, Mark Andrews isn't just going to like not be the central part of this offense. So I just think he's a really good get right now when, you know, he's been a perennial top three tight end. You're getting him a tight end four now.
Yeah, I mean, look, the fact that they lost Mike McDonald, the fact that they lost a ton of defensive assistants along with him across the league, and they lost talent on that defense as well, they're going to be in game scripts where they're throwing the ball more. I think you're right. A lot of the run rate overall stats from them last year, certainly that's always going to be the core of their philosophy offensively with Lamar Jackson under center, but they're going to be in some game scripts where they're throwing the ball a lot more. I think that was the whole point of hiring Todd Monken and moving away from Greg Roman, was to at least modernize their passing concept. So that should trickle down to all of these receivers, number one. And number two, I mean, just from an ADP perspective, Mark Andrews is kind of a little bit in this no man's land here at 55th overall, because Laporta's 25th overall, which is aggressive. Travis Kelce's 27th overall. Trey McBride is 44th overall. Then you kind of have Andrews here. It's Kittle at 68. It's Dalton Kincaid at 73. It's Kyle Pitts at 75 before you get all the way down to Evan Ingram at 91. Like, I think Mark Andrews has a much higher percentage, like if everything goes right, to be better than Laporta, Kelce, and McBride than to fall into the Kittle, Kincaid, and Kyle Pitts zone.
Yeah, I mean, like, would anyone be surprised if Mark Andrews is the tight end one in fantasy football this year?
No.
Of course not, right? And like I think you're right. Like, it's crazy that there's that big of a gap, especially from like Laporta to him, because I think Kelce is Kelce, right? I mean, we have such a large sample of him just being dominant. And we saw him finally like come to, you know, bring it together a little bit in the playoffs last year to make us feel better about, you know, 2024. But like, I don't under, and even you saying like, I'm not even a big Kincaid guy, but Kincaid, the ADP that you just rattled off, like, I think that's too late too. Like, there's a lot of these tight ends should be going earlier than they are. Maybe aside from, you know, some of the guys that, like Laporta in particular, maybe he should be, you know, I think he should be closer to like a McBride than where he's going right now.
Yeah. And look, I really like Zay Flowers and I still have the candle lit for Rashad Bateman. But I don't think either of those guys necessarily are going to be true dominant number one receivers that are earning like a, you know, 27 to 30% target share or something like that. So I think Andrews is still the favorite to lead this team in targets. Okay, let's go to your next worst ADP, JJ. And this is Jared Goff at QB 13, 90th overall. I mean, why do you hate Jared Goff, JJ?
Yeah, I mean, I think this really comes down to, you know, where, you know, if you're drafting on Yahoo, then you're looking at Goff at QB 13, and he might be, you know, not that high in other places that you, whether it's just an offline home league draft or something. But I'm really just looking at the pocket passer cluster that we see in the high end QB 2 range. And I'm saying whoever's the highest, I'm not going to get. I'm just going to get the falling value, whoever that ends up being, whether it's Trevor Lawrence, like if I'm going after that area, whether that's Trevor Lawrence, like realistically, like where's Matthew Stafford? What's his ADP looking like right now? Because
123rd overall QB 18.
Right. So realistically, what's the main difference between Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff? Right. Like that's the question that everyone should be asking. What's the difference between, from a ceiling perspective, maybe this is going to be a hot take, but from a ceiling perspective, what's the difference between Jared Goff and Will Levis and the way that they're going to score points? You know, there's a new, you know, obviously we feel better about the floor of Goff compared to Will Levis, but someone like what Levis has new coaching staff. You know, Brian Callahan should be more pass heavy. You got the weapons around him. He's got the arm. He obviously throws the ball deep. He threw the ball deep at an 8% higher rate than any other quarterback in football last year because he just isn't. He's like, it's like, For someone like Will Levis, this could just be like a Jameis Winston season, hypothetically.
Oh, yeah. I've said that 100 times. Yep, 100%. Yeah,
100%. Which would be awesome. Like, that's fantastic for fantasy football. Now, with Goff, the things that I'm worried about specifically with him, he did have a little bit higher of a touchdown rate last year than we typically see from Goff, and that's a number that generally does regress to the mean year over year. The other thing is that Detroit was good offensively, and someone say, oh, that's a good thing. It's not bad. Obviously, you know, Ben Johnson's still there. They have good weapons. I still think they're going to be a good offense overall, but they had over 3.3 offensive touchdowns per game last season. There's been 26 with teams with next season data since 2011 who hit 3.3 or more offensive touchdowns per game. And of those 26, all but one of them saw a decrease in touchdowns per game the following season. So the only one that didn't was New England from 2011 to 2012. And Tom Brady is not Jared Goff, right? That's not like, well, let's not make that comparison. So I'm just not as like, you know, just from like a mathematical standpoint, you want rushing at quarterback, you want that mobility. And there's a lot of reason to believe that there are arbitrage plays with Jared Goff. If he's going to go 90th overall, you can wait four rounds and get a guy with a similar ceiling, five rounds, get a guy with a similar ceiling as Goff.
Yeah, this is for sure your most boring pick here, JJ, yeah, which
it is. It's a layup.
It's a layup one, but it's all because it's like draft strategy, arbitrage, and like math based. But it all makes sense because there's no reason for us to sit here and discuss why the Detroit Lions offense will regress this year, right?
Correct.
I mean, because on paper it all looks the same. If Jameson Williams takes a step, like it could even be better. But mathematically, there's probably good odds that, you know, just some sort of chaos happens, and it's not. And even beyond that, I have Jared Goff as my QB 12, but he's the top of a, because he's just boring and safe and an easy projection and the quarterback of a good offense, he's the top of a giant tier of guys, right? Where, yeah, like, what's the point of taking Jared Goff when you could just take Matthew Stafford, shoot, even Kirk Cousins? Like,
yeah,
they probably have the same not the same floor as you mentioned with Levis, but probably like the same ceiling case. Geno Smith, I think, fits into this bucket. Yep. Even Justin Herbert, like, who goes much later because everybody's scared of that offense. I mean, he's definitely got the same. He's definitely probably even maybe have a higher ceiling than Jared Goff this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, the bottom line is you shouldn't be caring about floor when you're in, not only in the late rounds of your draft with all positions, but especially quarterback, because in the majority of leagues, 98% of leagues, you're going to be in a single quarterback format. And in those formats, especially if there's like shallower benches or if you're in like a 10 team league or something, there's going to be usable quarterbacks on the waiver wire in a worst case scenario, right? Like, Goff can match where he's going. If he finishes as a high-end QB2, low-end QB1, sure, like that can happen. But you can make the exact same argument for so many other quarterbacks that are going after him. And I'm only worried about ceiling. Like, to me, And again, maybe this is going to sound like a hot take to a lot of people. To me, someone like Deshaun Watson has a higher ceiling than Jared Goff this year because he has the rushing component to him. They're going to spread things out. They're going to throw the ball more. I like the weapons just as much, maybe just as much, but they're good weapons. And again, that rushing component is actually there for a guy like Watson to some degree. It's not the same that it was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. That just, it literally does not exist with Jared Goff. Like, he is not going to be giving you 5 rushing touchdowns and, you know, 300 plus yards on the ground.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into 4 a bit more interesting ADPs that JJ loves and hates right after this. All right, we're back. JJ, your next one, your best ADP here is Malik Nabers. And in full transparency, we actually just talked about Malik Nabers with Dalton Del Don on our mock draft recap show that came out on Monday. And I was very ready to, because he took Malik Nabers in the 3rd round of this draft. And I was like, I thought that was a little too aggressive. So I was ready to run back kind of the same arguments here to maybe push you on this Malik Nabers as the best ADP. And then I looked at it on Yahoo. He's the wide receiver 30, 60th overall, which I was like, well, damn, I actually really think that's a great ADP to take Malik Nabers too. So I might have some like pushback concerns, stuff like that. But for the most part, JJ, take it away here and why this is a really good ADP.
Yeah, you know, you and I have had tons and tons of discussions about prospects in this class. You know, you came on my podcast. We talked about it before the NFL draft happened. I saw it as Nabers as just as good of a prospect as Marvin Harrison Jr. coming out. I say that not just based on like what I watch, but also, you know, I'm more amateurish with my eyes. But, you know, with my data and my model that I use for prospecting, I lean on that pretty heavily. It's been successful for me in the past. It's back tested, all that good stuff. He had basically the same score in that model as Marvin Harrison Jr. did, right? That's the first thing. So it's the ZAP model. It's a Zachary Eason adjusted prospect model because I'm really creative and I can come up with cool names. You know, you gotta market it somehow.
That's pretty good. I'm like, as somebody that's terrible at naming things, I'm gonna give you credit. And that's pretty good.
Thank you. So the ZAP model had his score at 99.5. He's one of 13 wideouts. The ZAP model goes back to 2011. He's one of 13 wide receivers in that model to hit a score of 98. And 12 of them have next season data because one of them, or I guess 11 of them, because one of them is, there's 13 others. So one of them is Marvin Harrison Jr. So he doesn't have next season data. So 12 of them do have next season data. About half of them, 5 of the 12, scored 14 or more PPR points per game during their rookie season, which if you look at Malik Nabers' ADP, I like to look at ADP expectation. And what I mean by ADP expectation, it's very nerdy, but I think it's helpful. You can chart average draft position versus points per game scored and find trend lines based on the last, you know, I use the last decade's worth of data. And you can say, okay, 50th overall, 60th overall wide receiver, this is how many points per game we would expect him to score based on that ADP, right? With Malik Nabers, based on his ADP, which actually this is based on an ADP a little bit even higher than where Yahoo has him. His expectation is about 12 and a half PPR points per game. That's for him to meet the norm of what we see from wide receivers in that range. And this isn't just injury based either, because I only look at players who played 8 or more games in that season. I'm looking at it on a points per game basis. So this removes anyone who like played one game. I'm not looking at total points, right? I'm removing players who played one game and would really skew this data. So we're expecting 12 and a half points per game from him. But then you look at historically, these wide receivers with this good of a score have been well above that, a point and a half higher than that. I understand the offensive situation is iffy, but I don't think it's out of the question that we see like a 30% target share from Malik Nabers this year in that offense. We've seen, you know, Brian Daboll, you know, when Stephon Diggs got to Buffalo, we saw a pretty dramatic shift in the way that offense operated, but as well as him seeing massive, massive work in that offense. And the thing with Daboll too, is that he's not necessarily like, despite personnel, going to be some like run heavy team or anything. Like, I still think that they could be a relatively, you know, at least neutral team. Not only that, but they could see a lot of negative game scripts, which could help the wide receivers out a bit. So I'm really just betting on talent here. I don't love the situation, which is why I think Marvin Harrison should be, you know, ranked ahead of him, you know, in any format really, just because of the short term. But, you know, I'm really just betting on talent here. I just think Malik Nabers could be special.
Yeah, look, there are guys that are going ahead of him right now, at least in early Yahoo drafts, like Terry McLaurin, George Pickens, Zay Flowers, T. Higgins, Tank Dell. I've got neighbors ranked ahead of all of those guys.
Exactly.
And then Steph Diggs at wide receiver 24. That's like exactly where I have him, and that's neck and neck with Malik Nabers here. So I totally understand if you just want to close your eyes and bet on the talent. So I, again, this ADP here, I'm actually perfectly fine with. I think a lot of the Malik Nabers ceiling versus floor discussion is going to come down to where they end up deploying him and how they end up using him in this offense, because it's so tough with the Giants. We've talked about this the last 2 years, that so many of their guys just project best as slot receivers. And yeah, Malik Nabers was primarily used and exploited as a slot mismatch. Is that how they're going to deploy him in the NFL? Because I actually think that could maybe slightly diminish his ceiling, but really boost his floor, because he's just going to get so many layup targets in this offense.
Yeah.
You know, and like Daniel Jones is not a, it's not a perfect quarterback, but he's good enough to just get the ball to Malik Nabers on his first read and let him do the rest. Like I said a lot during draft season, that Nabers was the one who was uniquely skilled and gifted because of the way he wins to survive this Giants landing spot. And that's really what we're hoping for, is that he survives this landing spot in week in year one of his career. And then maybe something changes beyond that, whatever. So if he's going to be deployed that way, I feel pretty good about like the floor and ceiling combination. Now, if he's used as their top outside receiver, I'm slightly concerned about, you know, Daniel Jones getting him the ball on like big boy downfield routes. That is a little bit of a concern for me, you know. And then maybe we're looking at like Drew Lock as playing games for this team down the stretch, which maybe that's a good thing, maybe this is a bad thing, but I just hate to take a wide receiver and immediately I'm thinking, who's going to be their quarterback in December? That's sort of just my small concerns about Nabers. But overall, I'm with you. This is a good ADP here.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing to point out is I think people are, and I write about this in my draft guide. I mean, I do every year, but the market hates uncertainty, like despises it. And rookies are the definition of uncertain, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at how rookies perform versus ADP, you know, going back to that ADP expectation thing, they perform better across the board than almost any other type of player that you can find. I mean, there's different pockets where like going after veterans makes more sense and going after, you know, the second year guy makes more sense. But across the board at wide receiver and running back, rookies outperform ADP at a better rate than most other types of players do.
So just where do you have him ranked like overall wide receivers, Malik Nabers?
I think I have him around 15 or maybe 16. Like I'm pretty high on Nabers. Like
that's spicy.
My thing also, to your point about him playing outside, I do think that there's definite concern to some degree. I mean, like, I still think he's really, really good and yeah, he can just thrive and be fine on the outside. I don't really trust the Giants to know how to deploy him properly when we look at last year and what they did with Jalin Hyatt, right? Like, they go out, they get a slot. Like, Jalin Hyatt was a slot in college. Like, that's where he thrived when he won wide receiver. You know, he was the best wide receiver in the country. And you know, they used him on the perimeter last year because they have Wandell Robinson, which I assume they're going to want to continue to use in that area. And so, you know, hopefully they can get him some reps, but I am kind of expecting Nabers to probably only be in the slot, maybe at like a 25-30% rate, you know, not like, I think ideally it would be more 50-50, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just push back a little on the Hyatt thing because it was like he was a slot receiver in college because of that goofy Tennessee offense.
Right, right. But I think archetype wise, it made sense for him to not be there. Right.
Yeah.
But what we saw from a production standpoint and we didn't know, there was so much up in the air with Hyatt. Whereas I do think that the difference is obviously like, I think there's a lot less up in the air for a guy like Nabers versus Hyatt.
Totally. That makes complete sense. Okay, let's move to one of your worst ones here. And I was a little surprised. This one's a surprise to me. David Montgomery, running back 16, 50th overall player. David Montgomery, why are you down on him this year, JJ? At least relative to running back 16 ADP.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is on Yahoo, running back 16 is really, really rich for me. You know, if you look at Montgomery, you know, where does he thrive? Why are we drafting him in fantasy football? The number one reason is because of touchdowns. You know, we saw Jamal Williams in 2022 go absolutely bonkers and have so much goal line work and, you know, be a fantasy relevant asset as a result. last year, David Montgomery, pretty much the same deal. You know, he was pretty touchdown dependent, but he was scoring touchdowns, and that's very important. But if you take a step back, you know, I mentioned all the stuff about the Lions earlier and about how we could see some regression with that offense just in terms of scoring touchdowns. I'm not expecting like them to see two touchdowns per game instead of 3.3, but I do think that, you know, we're going to see somewhat of a dip. But I think the bigger point with Montgomery is he's probably more of just a floor play than a ceiling play. That seems so backwards to people because he can score a lot of touchdowns. But my fear is, number one, he's not going to see that much work through the air. We've seen that now. We saw that last year with Jahmyr Gibbs. You know, there's kind of like a tale of two parts, or not even two halves necessarily, but at least two parts of that season for Montgomery last year, where from weeks 1 through 6, he was healthy. And during that stretch, this was the pre-injury stretch, he had a 61% running back rush share per game, 6% target share per game. And two of these games were without Jahmyr Gibbs, for the record. 6% target share per game, 16.6 PPR points per game during that stretch. Then he comes back in week 10. From week 10 onward, that running back rush share dropped by about 7 percentage points. The target share dropped by 1 percentage point. And he ended up scoring 3.5 fewer PPR points per game, you know, down the stretch from week 10 onward. Now, I know that, again, from week 1 to 6, Jahmyr Gibbs wasn't there for part of that stretch. But the goal line split between the two at the start of the season was 8-1. So Jahmyr Gibbs had one. That's in four games. Jahmyr Gibbs had one goal line rush. David Montgomery had 8 through those 6 games. The goal line split from week 10 when David Montgomery got back through the end of the season and into the playoffs. So I'm including the playoff sample here too. 11-10. There was almost a 50-50 split between Gibbs and Montgomery, you know, at the goal line. And that's the fear. If David Montgomery doesn't see 75 or 80% of their goal line rushes this year, he's going to have a pretty tough time in fantasy football, because of all players that are being drafted that early, he's the one guy that's probably the most touchdown dependent. And we're doing it for good reason. He's in an offense that should be good. You know, he's the bruiser of the two, but they started to use Gibbs in that role a little bit more. And that's the fear for me. And I mean, Gibbs to me is a special talent. He's very, very good. He's obviously going to see a lot of work through the air. I don't think Montgomery's going to see a lot of work through the air. So at that price point, this is one of those situations, you know, unlike Zamir White, where like, I think there are other running backs that I just straight up would rather have than Montgomery in that range. But then obviously there's going to be some tight ends and some wide receivers there too that I would rather draft.
So I agree with you. There are tight ends and wide receivers I would definitely rather draft in his range. I will say that I'm curious as to who the running backs are that you like more, because I struggle to find running backs going after him that I really like more than David Montgomery. But before I get to that, I will say it did go very much kind of maybe under the radar how much Jahmyr Gibbs improved as a between the tackles runner late in the season. Yeah. So there is a real fear that that Montgomery loses just a lot of base early down work and even potentially goal line work, as you mentioned, to David Montgomery. I do kind of think that's priced in a little bit at running back. I have him at running back 17, not running back 16, you know, big whoop there. But the guys going after him: Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara, Kenneth Walker, James Conner, Raheem Mostert, Ramondre Stevenson, Zamir White, and then those other guys I mentioned when we talked about Zamir White. The only one I think I definitely like better than Montgomery there is probably Ramondre Stevenson. So are there other guys in that group that you definitely like more than Montgomery?
I think the next three that you named, what was it?
Kamara, Walker, Aaron Jones. Yeah. And then James Conner.
I'm more intrigued by those three just because with Walker, I think they're going to score points in a similar way. Right. And I think that Walker is just a more explosive runner than David Montgomery is. So I'm going to just give him the edge, even though, you know, offensive line wise, obviously it's night and day between the two, but I just think he's just a better home run hitting back. He's just a better running back in general than David Montgomery is. With Kamara, now I will openly admit that Kamara has been, I think for any fantasy analyst, one of the toughest ranks of the season.
100%, like he's, yeah.
Like, cause look what he did last year coming back. I mean, he caught what, 75 passes. Like it's really, really difficult when you combine what we know of Alvin Kamara. We see an offensive coordinator shift in New Orleans. You know, we know that the opportunity, and on top of the Kendre Miller stuff, that's what I wanted to get out. I couldn't think of it. The Kendre Miller stuff, like How often do you see a second year player just getting destroyed by his head coach in the media, like week in and week out?
The only other one is A.T. Perry, who happens to play for the same head coach.
Yeah. Like the Saints hate all of their players.
Yeah.
Except for Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, and Alvin Kamara.
I don't even know if they like Chris Olave that much.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the only one that Dennis Allen is like universally really nice to, well, the two guys he's universally really nice to in the press is like Jamal Williams and Taysom Hill, which perfect.
It's true. But here's my point. Like, if Kamara walks away from this season with 60 to 70 catches, no one's going to be surprised at all. Right. So I'd rather take Kamara there, even though he has age not on his side. Aaron Jones, you know, obviously you can go either way. I gravitate towards the pass catchers because it's so important in fantasy football in all formats, even standard formats. And Aaron Jones to me has been arguably, because I don't want people coming at me, arguably the best pass catching back that we've seen over the last like 5 to 6 years. Like he's a very, very, very good pass catching back. And you look at that offense, number one, I think it's going to naturally just skew pass heavy a little bit just because of the way that Kevin O'Connell runs things, but they don't have many alternatives. Like I like Ty Chandler. Like you can throw the dart at Ty Chandler late too. So don't take that the wrong way, but I think I'd rather take the chance on a guy like Aaron Jones as sort of like, if we're talking about floor, because that's kind of what we're talking about with David Montgomery. Montgomery's ceiling really hits with that contingent upside, which I understand.
That was going to be my biggest pushback to this is that I do think he has that contingent upside.
The difference though, between like his contingent upside and someone else's is that that sort of is baked into his ADP to some degree because, he's being drafted higher than where his like projection is. I always like to get the running backs who are being drafted like at projection or even below projection, who then also have that contingent upside, right? Whereas I don't know if that's totally there with Montgomery right now.
Yeah, that's fair. He has been a much better value on other sites than he has been necessarily on Yahoo. That 100%. That is for sure with David Montgomery. Let's move into another one of your best ADPs. And I really like this one because, again, when I saw the name, I was like, okay. Yeah, we've talked about Jonathan Brooks and how he's interesting at ADP. But maybe I have some pushback. But then I see that Jonathan Brooks on Yahoo is running back 37. 107th overall player. So again, talk about a layup. Here's a layup, JJ. Tell the people why they should be drafting Jonathan Brooks as the running back 37, despite the fact that, oh no, he might not play till week 3, week 4, which I know is going to scare some people.
Well, that's the reason why he's going where he's going. And again, going back to what I said earlier, like people hate uncertainty. Not only is he coming off an ACL, but he's also a rookie. And people don't, there's a lot of question marks about the Carolina offense too.
Sure.
But they, invest a little bit in offensive line. Dave Canales comes over. And I think the Canales hire is intriguing for Brooks because of what he did last year with Rashad White. Rashad White was a pure bell cow back in that Tampa Bay offense. And if you listen to what Canales said after they drafted Brooks, they traded up to get Brooks. They draft Brooks. And you listen to what he said, they want to run the snot out of the ball. And they love his versatility, as a receiver out of the backfield. Now, a lot of people are going to, again, going back to what you said, they're going to say, okay, but he tore his ACL in November. They're already saying he's not going to play till like week 3, week 4. Well, let me introduce you to a guy named Todd Gurley, right? Todd Gurley, exact same situation went down with Gurley. A November ACL tear. He comes back, starts the season off a little cold, in a bad offense, on a Jeff Fisher led team, horrible offense. They scored fewer than 30 touchdowns that year. And then Todd Gurley starts to get more work after the first month of the season, and he wins Offensive Rookie of the Year. Now, Gurley was a better prospect than Jonathan Brooks, but I think that people are discounting how good Jonathan Brooks was as a prospect. Mm-hmm. If he hadn't torn his ACL, he would have been the consensus RB1 no matter what. He was the RB1 and he was, I guess, the consensus, but I'm saying like there wouldn't be much of a question. I think that he might have even gone at the tail end of round one and into round two, as opposed to sort of like, a handful of picks into round two. But his zap score, his zap model score was right in line with a guy like Kenneth Walker. So this is, despite the fact this is a production based model, and he played with Roschon Johnson and Bijan Robinson at Texas. So it wasn't until his final collegiate season where he was truly a bell cow. And when he got that workload, he dominated. He thrived. He was a very, very good player. So, he gets a little bit of a bump because, he wasn't able to really you know, he played with one of the best running back prospects of the decade in Bijan Robinson. So he got a little bit of a bump in the model because of that. But overall, I just think he's a really, really good prospect. He's a do-it-all guy. I'm not overly concerned about Miles Sanders and Chuba Hubbard. And at the end of the day, it's easier to take on, you know, these like zeros at the beginning of your season than in the middle and the later parts of your season. Because at the beginning of the season, there are no teams on bye. You can just stash the guy on your bench. You don't have to worry about it. And then towards the end of the season, when you have this talent slash opportunity meeting with Jonathan Brooks, he could be a league winner down the stretch in the most important part of your fantasy season, which is the playoffs.
Yeah, it's so funny you made that Todd Gurley comparison, because Edwin Porras from Fantasy Points was on the pod and made that exact same comparison too. And I think you're right. Gurley was a much more talented prospect coming in, but from a journey perspective, it's pretty similar. And I just looked this up, which is, you know, a disgusting thing to do. But Todd Gurley coming into his rookie season in 2015 was the 24th running back off the board, whereas Brooks is the 37th. So that talent difference is, I think, already baked in to Brooks' ADP.
Right. Yeah. And again, Gurley finishes a top 10 back in points per game. It's just that you needed a little bit of patience in order for that to really get there.
100%. And I think you're going to need patience with Brooks, but and maybe the payoff isn't that big, but you can still get a pretty significant win. Like, I have him ranked 12 spots at running back ahead of 37, that's for sure. Yeah. So I'm with you on Jonathan Brooks. Another interesting one you have here, worst ADP, Josh Jacobs. Running back 12, 32nd overall. This is one I've struggled with Josh Jacobs. I don't really have a strong take on Jacobs, so I'm curious to hear why you don't like him at running back 12.
Yeah, so I don't think this is the crux of the argument, but I do think that we shouldn't just like ignore completely that in 2023 he wasn't that great, right? Like his efficiency marks across the board didn't look good. He was Zamir White was better than him in yards after contact per attempt, broken tackles per attempt, success rate. His workload was solid last year, Jacobs, but he had a career high in percentage of carries that failed to reach 2 yards. So he was not good at gaining, like, you know, chunk yards or positive yards. His rate of gaining 10 or more yards was just 3.9%. That was by far a career low for him, but it was also the lowest rate of gaining 10 or more yards on the ground by any 200 plus attempt running back since 2011. So, you know, like, I think that there's a lot of noise to running back statistics like this, right? But I don't think that we can completely just brush it off and say, Jacobs is fine. He's the most, he's just as explosive as he was when he came out of college. Everything's going to be good and fine. That's the first part of this. But the second part, I think, is more important, is Matt LaFleur and this coaching staff. You know, if you look at what he's done historically, even going back to Tennessee, he split a backfield between Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis his final season at Tennessee. Now, to be totally fair, Derrick Henry was not the same running back as he is now that season. But if you look at the second half of that season, when Henry really, after their bye, Henry really started to become Derrick Henry, it took them like a month and a half to finally give Derrick Henry that backfield, because this is the way that LaFleur coaches his teams. And you look at what's gone on in Green Bay every year. It's a split, but people were tearing their hair out year in and year out because Aaron Jones was never a true bell cow back in that offense. And when he was, yeah, he dominated in fantasy football, but they were always giving touches to another player. And then look at the team's actions. Not only can you listen to Matt LaFleur say this is going to be a backfield where other guys get touches, it's not just going to be like, he's openly talked about the split backfield, but what did they do? They went out day two of the NFL draft and they draft Marshawn Lloyd. Not only that, but apparently AJ Dillon is getting some steam and having a good camp. So there are other factors and other pieces to that backfield that I'm worried about. Obviously, you know, this is a team that should score a lot of points, should be really, really good offensively. It just goes back to it's sort of like a Zamir White thing where I just don't like it at cost. Like, I don't know if there's that much room for growth where Jacobs is going. I don't think that a healthy Jacobs is going to fall, you know, super far off of this point. Like, I don't think he should be ranked lower than RB20 or something, but I do worry about the split backfield and how that ceiling is going to come to fruition.
Yeah, people are going to continue to like, LOL, AJ Dillon at that whole thing. But this very coaching staff is the one that has kind of maybe overemphasized AJ Dillon. And like, AJ Dillon doesn't even have to have a big role to mess up this Josh Jacobs thing. He only has to carve out like a small handful of touches. And then if Marshawn Lloyd's carving out a small handful of touches. Like, there are a lot of trapdoors with Josh Jacobs. I will just say that I have him like running back 13, so right around this, but I look at the overall, and there are not very many running backs going after him that I would prefer. Correct. I'd be curious if you think that, but like, I look at the overall rankings, he's going ahead of DJ Moore, Jalen Waddle, Josh Allen, Cooper Kupp, Joe Mixon, Jalen Hurts, Amari Cooper, you know, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. Like, I think I prefer almost all of those guys with the exception of Mixon ahead of Josh Jacobs from an overall team build standpoint.
That's the thing. This isn't about a positional rank thing for me. I think that, you know, you can make the argument for RB12. That's fine. You know, I might have a couple guys, like a guy or two ahead of, I think I have met like RB14, RB15. It's not like that far off of where he's being drafted. The problem is, like, overall, I'm like two rounds later with Josh Jacobs and where he's going on Yahoo. Like, I'd rather have an elite quarterback, some of the tight ends, and definitely the wide receivers over him.
All right. We have two more to get to. We're going to take one quick break, but don't X out of the podcast, because you're going to want to hear these two spicy ones that JJ has before we get out of here right after this. All right, JJ, we have two more, one best, one worst. Let's start positive, and I'm gonna make you end on a negative note here. Your final best ADP is Chase Brown, running back 38, 108th overall player off the board. I think I've heard you before be a little dubious on Chase Brown as a player, so I'm curious as to how you've come around to him being one of the best ADPs on Yahoo.
I've gone on a roller coaster with Chase Brown, because when he came out last year, you know, I got receipts in my prospect guide. I wrote that he was a player to target, like in your rookie drafts and stuff. And then, you know, rookie season happens and I have a year two model, which projects how well a player is going to do entering their second season by looking at their prospect score, as well as their metrics from year one. And with Chase Brown, he wasn't used enough in the offense for him to have like a boost in his year two score. So his year two score didn't look very good. And so at the beginning of January, or in January, I did a Dynasty Sells podcast, because he was starting to surge a little bit with like news that maybe Mixon wasn't going to be around a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, I think that Chase Brown, if you can get, you know, something decent in return for him, probably not a bad sell, because he's probably going to not be a bell cow in his offense. And then I started doing research from a redraft perspective. And in redraft, the year two model and prospect scores and all my models that I use, it matters a lot more for earlier round guys than middle round and late round guys.
Interesting.
And I think a lot of that has to do with just survivorship bias a little bit, where if you're a player like Chase Brown, day three guy, you know, you didn't do that much as a rookie. You made some good plays, of course, and some splash plays, but he didn't do like that much as a rookie because the volume just wasn't there. But you're still being drafted where you're being drafted. The market is telling you that there's probably something going on that's favorable. And with running backs, you know, it's a position where talent sure matters for all the reasons we talked about earlier. But at the same time, it comes down to a coaching decision. If Cincinnati wants Chase Brown to be their bell cow back, I freaking would love to have Chase Brown on my fantasy rosters, right? And, you know, you look at what they did, or lack thereof, in the draft. They lose Joe Mixon. They don't do anything in the draft. They get Zach Moss, and now it's this Moss-Brown tandem that we're worried about in fantasy football. I think everyone's initial inclination was, you know, they get Moss, you know, archetype-wise, he's the early down bruiser, probably the goal line guy as well. Chase Brown, who, you know, he made those really, really big plays, so it's a really small sample, but his yards per route run last year was like out of control. Crazy, because of some of those like massive plays that he had. But he's a really dynamic back. Like, these are the kinds of running backs that I admittedly kind of fall in love with, maybe to a fault at times, where like, he's got enough size, you know, he's like right around, like right below 210, but he's got enough size to him. He's not like a Saquon Barkley size freak, but he does have good speed. He had a really good speed score at the combine. He can make these big plays. And it really just comes down to the fact that, like, what if Cincinnati splits the goal line work between Zach Moss and Chase Brown? Even that small change could make Chase Brown an easy RB2 in fantasy football, given the offense that he's in. And then, you know, what if he is the 1A in this offense? And, you know, this is another concept that I've talked about for years that I think is really, really important for people to understand when they're drafting, is this idea of ambiguous backfields. Like, you want to target running backs in these up in the air backfields, because oftentimes those running backs can overtake those back. There's contingent upside, of course, but oftentimes, you know, they're ambiguous because we just don't know how things are going to go down. And then the coaching staff gives it to one of these players. And so with Chase Brown going where he's going, and you know, compared to Zach Moss, I'm to the point now where I have Chase Brown straight up ranked ahead of Zach Moss. Like, I think he's just a better player. And I think that he's the better, by far, the better value. And I think in season long leagues right now, he's arguably the best running back value on the board.
I love that. I started off after like the draft, you know, kind of early fantasy rankings, think I might like Zach Moss ahead of Chase Brown, but it was one of those, like, any indication from camp that
yes,
Brown was going to be ahead, I would flip those immediately. And I have at this point, because it does sound like out of Cincinnati Bengals training camp that he has been kind of that 1A back. Now, I don't think, like, you should take your shots on Zach Moss if his ADP really starts to tumble because of those ambiguity of this backfield and everything. And the fact that I think he was signed Zach Moss because he's like a consistent grinder type back, and he's good on pass protect. He's good in pass protection. I think that's really why that was an area where Joe Mixon struggled. I think it's why they wanted to swap those two guys out. You know, Chase Brown, we'll see what type of player he is. I mean, he's one of these guys, a lot like Jaylen Warren, who I really, really like Jaylen Warren. But just before I say this, let's be clear about that. But he's one of these guys that catches passes and he wears number 30, so he gets the Austin Eckler comparisons, both of these guys. But I don't know if he's going to become Austin Eckler, but I do think he's an intriguing player. And I'm with you that Moss right now, again, on Yahoo, 87th player off the board, running back 29. I do think those two ADPs should maybe Moss doesn't need to fall all the way down there, but I think they need to be probably flipped and a little bit closer together.
I think they're both fine targets. I just think that Chase Brown's a way better target.
Totally.
Than the two. Like, I think Moss is fine. If you want to get him at RB 30-ish, whatever, like, that's fine. But I would say that, you know, I wouldn't get both of them on the same team. But if you have multiple teams, I'd prefer Chase Brown at his ADP.
Yeah, basically my rankings right now, I have Chase Brown at running back 28. I have Zach Moss at running back 34. So I'm definitely, like, I'm right where Moss is going with Chase Brown, but I'm higher on Moss than where Brown is. So I do think they're both really good targets. We're on the same page about this one. Your final one here, JJ. I think I know the case you're going to make here with CJ Stroud as your final worst ADP at QB6, 51st overall. But there's so much Texans hype. There's so much Stroud hype. I think the listeners will find this very compelling. Again, CJ Stroud is QB6 on Yahoo. I think on most sites, he's probably QB5, but Dalton Del Don works for Yahoo, so Anthony Richardson is QB5 on our particular draft board. But tell the people why you're not into CJ Stroud as the sixth quarterback, 51st player off the board.
Yeah, I think this is more of an overall ADP thing for sure. I do have Kyler Murray ahead of CJ Stroud, which people are going to listen to and literally just call me a moron and just destroy me for that take. But really, it comes down to what matters in fantasy football versus what matters in real football. You can make the argument very easily that CJ Stroud should be the favorite or one of the favorites to win MVP this year. I mean, look at everything they did. They get a great piece in Stephon Diggs to complement that offense. Like they should air it out more. Things will look better for CJ Stroud. The problem is that he doesn't bring any juice with his legs. He just doesn't. He scored 2.3 points per game last season on the ground. So if you use 3 as the benchmark, 3 points per game at quarterback, you go back to 2014, and you look at all the quarterbacks who scored fewer than 3 points per game with their legs who were drafted in the top 60, which is where CJ Stroud is being drafted. There's been 23 of them in the past. Only 5 of those 23, Matt, ended up exceeding ADP expectation, because rushing matters so much at the quarterback position going into a given season. The thing that fluctuates most, like if I were to sit here and say, who's going to rush for more yards, Lamar Jackson or Kirk Cousins, or Lamar Jackson and Brock Purdy, right? Mm-hmm. You'd say Lamar Jackson's going to rush for more yards than Brock Purdy. Okay. Then I say, who's going to throw for more touchdowns, Lamar Jackson or Brock Purdy? We might say probably Purdy, but there's a chance that Lamar Jackson is going to throw for more touchdowns than Purdy's going to throw for. That exercise tells you, and there's math that backs this up, there's so much more volatility with passing. The touchdown rate is a number that fluctuates tremendously year over year. Now, CJ Stroud's going to see an improved touchdown rate this year, and it shouldn't shock anyone if he has the best touchdown rate in football. But the point is that there's a lot more variance there. It's just the way that fantasy football is played. Typically, with these pocket passing quarterbacks that are being drafted earlier, they're way, way worse bets. Actually, historically, high-end QB2s and low-end QB1s who are mobile quarterbacks have outperformed pocket passers who have gone in the top 6 of the position. So it's just, that's it. Like, I'd rather take, you know, Kyler, definitely Kyler at his ADP versus Daniel or versus Stroud at his. I think Jaden Daniels going way later, given the mobile upside, you know, I'm not as high as some of the real truthers out there who think he's going to be like a massive league winner, because you still need the passing component. But like, realistically, there's not, from a fantasy point scored perspective, there's a chance that there's not as dramatic of a difference, at least from the standpoint of like where they're being drafted. There's just too big of a gap there. So that's my fear with CJ Stroud. I'm opting for the mobile quarterbacks early all day long. And I would much rather get a lot of the running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends there as well.
Yeah, Kyler actually is 53rd off the board QB7. So it's actually pretty close with Stroud on Yahoo, which I think is just pretty surprising. But I'm with you that Kyler is definitely a guy that I've targeted a lot. I have him as QB7 ahead of some of those guys that some other people would maybe prefer. The only thing, like, you said there were five quarterbacks that fit that. Who were the five quarterbacks? Do you have that off the top of your head?
I don't have it off the top of my head. I think, like, you know, but it's been like Brady or like Rodgers and stuff like that. Like, it can definitely happen. It just comes down to, you know, is their touchdown rate going to be somewhat of an outlier touchdown rate? And can that happen? Touchdown rate being touchdowns divided by pass attempts. Now, can that happen? Of course. Like, if I'm betting CJ Stroud versus Tua Tagovailoa, who's going to have a higher touchdown rate, despite Tua's two big weapons, I'm still going to say CJ Stroud, of course, right?
Yeah.
But I also did some research that I think is kind of interesting to this point. When you look at pocket passers who are drafted early like that, like a CJ Stroud, and you compare those pocket passers to high-end QB2s, which are guys that are ranked in like the QB13 to QB16 range, if you were to draft, historically, this is based on the last 10 years worth of data, if you were to draft two high-end QB2s this year, you could go to Goff, you could go to Purdy, you could go to Tua. I think you could even consider like Cousins and Stafford in this tier, in this grouping, right? If you draft two of the high-end QB2 pocket passers, the odds that one of them outscores CJ Stroud and gives you a better ceiling is actually there. They have better odds of one of those two outperforming a top six pocket passer than that top six pocket passer outscoring both of them. And that just completely goes down and boils down to the fact that passing numbers have a lot of variance. And all of a sudden, you know, you can throw an 88-yard bomb to the 1 yard line and then they run it in. And that those 4 points are bigger and more important than the yardage total that you got off of the bomb. You know, it's just how fantasy football is scored.
Yeah, look, it definitely bothers me that when I look at the top six quarterbacks in my rankings and in Yahoo ADP, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, that Stroud sticks out like a sore thumb in terms of the rushing component. I mean, he had 167 rushing yards last year in 15 games. You know, even Mahomes, who's probably the least rushing based quarterback of those guys, he had, you know, just almost 400 yards on the ground, which does matter. I mean, these are some of the quarterbacks that had more rushing yards than CJ Stroud last year. You know, Zach Wilson, Daniel Jones in 6 games, Tyrod Taylor in 11 games and not that many starts. Tommy, like the entire Giants quarterback room, and Desmond Ridder had more rushing yards than CJ Stroud last year. Like, that is a problem for sure. But man, I mean, CJ Stroud, like, I know he's going to have to throw for like 50 touchdowns to beat this ADP. I could definitely see it happening. And I know you can too. I don't necessarily love the ceiling case for a lot of these guys going around him, at least on Yahoo drafts, like Zay Flowers, Aaron Jones, we talked about Mark Andrews, maybe a difference there, but like George Pickens, Alvin Kamara, Terry McLaurin, Kenneth Walker, Malik Nabers, like all these guys, I don't necessarily know if I see that. Like, I do see the ceiling floor kind of problematic area for CJ Stroud. I just don't know if I see a lot of like clear guys I want to click on there. To be fair though, from a structural perspective, I also don't mind waiting for the next tier of quarterbacks and getting those guys as opposed to CJ Stroud. So I'm not like, I'm definitely not 100% with you here, but I'm not like 0% with you here, if that makes sense.
Look, I want to be clear that, again, I think that he could win MVP. I think he could dominate and he could still play up to this ADP. You know, we're playing probability here at the end of the day. And we're saying like, here's the likelihood that this will or will not happen. And I think that some people might come back and say like, well, what about Patrick Mahomes? Like, he's not really that much of a mobile quarterback either. You know, what's the difference between him and CJ Stroud? Well, number one, he's a little bit more mobile than CJ Stroud, as you noted. Yeah. But number two, there's a big, big difference in the way that Andy Reid calls that offense. We know factually they're going to be insanely pass heavy. not just in general, but close to the end zone. Like, that's the key with Kansas City, where we haven't yet seen that slash know that for sure. You know, with CJ, even when CJ Stroud was thriving last year, the Texans were a pretty, you know, middle of the road slash run heavy team. And that was without, you know, having, you know, I mean, maybe Joe Mixon's not an upgrade, but, you know, without having like a sincere, you know, obvious go-to running back in that backfield. Obviously, look, I'm not saying they're going to be run heavy, but I'm just saying that there are cases where like this isn't a match with like Kansas City. Kansas City is a very, very special case.
Yeah, I'm not sure how instructive like the way the Texans called offense last year is going to be for this year, just because I'm not sure they even knew like how good this guy is until midway through the year. But I'm at least glad you presented this case, JJ, because I know for a fact I'm too Texans pilled. And like before I had them as my number three best offense in the league on Football 301. Like, I'm very, very, very Texans pilled. So before I get on the runaway train here, I'm glad you at least maybe it's too late for me. Maybe you can't save me, but maybe you can save some of my listeners before we go too crazy.
I would take him over Burrow, over Dak and Jordan Love. I just think that like a guy like Kyler has a better upside case than Stroud. I know people don't want to hear that. I get that. But like, I'm actually shocked though. Like you said, I'm shocked that Kyler has the ADP that he has right now.
Yeah, it is really. And we've gone too long on the show. I won't take up any more of your time to have some esoteric, like stupid conversation about quarterback rushing. But it is like almost so boring to talk about the quarterback position these days. Like you get like, well, why do you have Jaden Daniels ranked so high? Because he runs. Like, why don't you have this guy ranked? Because he doesn't run. Like, it is so boring to talk about quarterbacks now at this point in fantasy. But like, hey, we're just working with the rubric we have.
That's right. That's right. That's what it comes down to. We're just playing the game that we got to play.
All right, JJ, this has been fantastic. Really appreciate you doing this. I think you brought a ton of great perspective, some different perspective for me, which is what we need on this show. That is 100% for sure. Tell the people where they can find you and where they can get the excellent late round draft guide.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at LateRoundQB. Check out LateRound.com. The draft guide's for sale over there. It's like 80% game theory. So a lot of the stuff that I talked about, like the market trends and stuff, you'll get all of that at every position, at every part of your draft. And then the final 20%, I do what I have to do because everyone wants players to target, players to avoid rankings. And that gets updated every week. So if you purchase it, you will get updated rankings and stuff every Friday.
I said it at the top and I sincerely mean it. JJ is, if he's not the best, he's certainly one of the best fantasy football analysts in the game because he does all that stuff. The game theory stuff that I have almost no interest in talking about. I like talking about players and teams, and that's kind of the way my brain works. So if you feel like you don't get that information from this podcast, fair critique. Go get the late round draft guide to get that information from JJ, who's 100,000 times better at it than me. That is going to do it for this show. Again, make sure you check out all of JJ's work. And please, if you like this show, I would consider it a personal favor if you could like, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Again, it's not a personal favor if it's not a 5-star review. Okay, then it's not a personal favor. But if it is a 5-star review, I would consider it a personal favor. You can also send us an email, fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Written emails are good. Voice and video notes are way better. Again, consider that a personal favor if you want to talk to the show. We would absolutely love that. We continue rankings week tomorrow on Wednesday as John Paulson does a deep dive on how to make legit good fantasy rankings, because there's a lot of legit bad fantasy rankings out there that I've got a lot of problems with. Hey, including my own. Until then, we're out.